Good morning. We're going to begin the Agriculture and Food Finance and Policy Division meeting. We do have a quorum. The clerk will note the roll. And we do have minutes from February 19th. So Representative Brand, would you like to move those minutes?
Yep, Madam Chair, I have moved the minutes from February 19th.
All right. Any additions or corrections? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed, nay. The motion prevails. The minutes are adopted. We have a couple of busy days coming up today and into the future week here. But today we're going to have an overview from the Department of Ag of the governor's proposed budget. And then we have four bills today. And a couple of those are going to be laid over and a couple are going to move on. But we will get started. So I appreciate that we've got Deputy Commissioner Vogel here. So I'll just ask you to begin your presentation.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I appreciate the invitation to come here and present our budget recommendations. So I'll just go through them. We have eight total, so I'll go through each of them. I'm happy to answer questions as we go along, or we can wait till the end. And if there's any questions I can't answer, we have our amazing team of division directors and staff here to answer more specifics. So I'll get started. So our first ask is for agricultural trade and marketing. It's $500,000 for the biennium, or $250,000 per year. It's to expand capacity for our domestic and international trade opportunities. It's for an additional two FTEs, one for international and one for domestic, and as well as programmatic funds for our trade programming for producers, processors, and Minnesota companies. We have currently one FTE devoted to international trade. Wisconsin has four. So there's a lot more that we can be doing on the international trade front in terms of market exploration and market development, particularly in a time with the federal government and the uncertainty on our trade relationship. So in addition, our domestic trade, we would use some of the time of one of the FTEs to help with direct-to-consumer marketing in local markets, including farm-to-school and farm-to-institutions, as well as restaurants, retail grocers, and then also national markets for Minnesota companies. So there's a lot that we can do there, and we feel like now is the time to do more on that front. So that's the first one.
And just a note for the committee members, we do have in your packet is the presentation, so you haven't found that yet. Everybody's got their budget books as well, but the presentation is here.
Secondly, we have an initiative for rural mental health, which we've talked a lot about in this committee, and I know folks feel very passionate about this as well as we do at the agency and the governor's office. So we're asking for $450,000 for the biennium, or $225,000 per year. It's one additional rural mental health specialist, as we like to say, a TED 2. You've all met Ted Matthews. I wish we could clone him over and over again, but we can't. But we certainly, he covers the entire state for all the needs that we have. He did at least over 1,000 hours of counseling in 2018 alone, and so he certainly needs help to reach all the farmers who need help right now. It's also an annual increase to our Farm Advocate program that's been around since 1984. We have 10 advocates right now, and they are at capacity. There's more that help that they need to help farmers who need help with bankruptcy, mediation, and other things related to farm activities. So we'd also want to do a increase to their hourly rate. They put in a lot of hours late at night, calls on the weekends, and we want to give them the increase that they need to keep functioning. We also have funding for and promotion of the Farm and Rural Helpline, which I know many of you have heard of. We have been able to cover some of it for now, but that's going to be coming to an end pretty shortly, so we'll need additional funding to help keep that going. As well as public information and engagement campaign aimed at reducing the stigma and identifying signs of stress and sharing resources with those who work with farmers each day. Ag emergency preparedness and response. I know many of you are aware of the HPAI outbreak in 2015, which was devastating to our turkey industry and our ag economy in general. The University of Minnesota estimates that there was a $650 million impact to Minnesota. We had over 100 Minnesota poultry producers affected by the outbreak, and we had to depopulate over 9 million birds. So Because of that outbreak and because of the help of the legislature, which thank you very much for that, we established the Ag Emergency Account and started the Office of Emergency Preparedness and Response. So we had some money for the Department of Agriculture as well as the Board of Animal Health, and we've used that for a number of activities, including Palmer Amaranth, as well as some other equipment purchases to be ready for the next foreign animal disease that comes our way. You've probably heard about African swine fever. It's a major U.S. concern. There is no vaccine and has been in a number of European countries, 26 provinces in China, and then reported yesterday they did find it in Vietnam. And obviously that affects hogs, and that's a whole other situation to deal with as opposed to turkeys if that were to hit. So it's important that we're ready if that comes along. So we're asking for $875,000 for fiscal year 20. That is a one-time appropriation of $325,000 to help increase the balance of the Ag Emergency Account to have something in case something were to hit. $250,000 pass-through to Board of Animal Health for emergency planning activities, and then $300,000 for our Office of Emergency Preparedness and Response to allow for maintaining that along with the director we have, as well as the staff that helps with things like the secure milk supply and other emergency planning activities. And then from that, fiscal year 21 and beyond, it would be the $550,000 ongoing. That's the $250,000 passed through to Board of Animal Health, and then the $300,000 operating for the office. The next one is noxious weeds, which I know you've heard a lot about in this committee. This is a picture of meadow knapweed, which is one of the weeds on our eradicate list. So it is $1.8 million for the biennium, $900,000 per year. This is a fiscal cliff, so we did get a one-time appropriation last cycle for mostly grants to local units of government for noxious weed control. We heard from a lot of our grants, a lot from our counties and our county ag inspectors that they needed help from the state to manage a number of these weeds. With the changing weather patterns, we're seeing a lot more nasty weeds come along, particularly Palmer amaranth, which is one I know that you've heard a lot about. It also helps us administer the grant program and enforcement of the noxious weed law. We had quite a bit of interest in the grant money that we had available this last year, and so we anticipate that'll continue, if not increase.
Just going to stop for a question.
Yes.
Representative Backlund.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, thank you. Is this enough? I know where I live, we're worried about all our other stuff, the roadside stuff that the county highway engineers worry about and the weeds up there, but in real farming country, mm-hmm. I got to think that that's got to be a real concern. So my question is this enough, or is there a projection of what you truly need to get this done?
Deputy Commissioner Bobo.
Madam Chair, Representative Eklund, thank you. That's a very good question. I would say that there's always room for more money that we could use. We certainly want to be mindful of the other asks that we have within our budget. But certainly I think in terms of the amount of funding that it takes for these local units of government to manage these things, and for farmers in particular, it is quite a cost. And so I would say this probably doesn't cover everything, but we also just wanted to be mindful of our ask for our budget in this year.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you. I appreciate that. I just know that our weed control person up in my county says whoever squawks the loudest gets it first, and when the money runs out, that's it. So. Mm-hmm.
And a note on that, we do prioritize folks that have weeds on the eradicate list. So if there was Palmer found in that county, we do prioritize that because of the dangers and the economic impact those can have.
All right. We have another question. Representative Poston.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think this is a question for you. Stepping back a couple of pages, we were talking about rural mental health and Ted Matthews, and they're asking for one additional rural mental health specialist. Did we not already hear a bill asking for two?
Thank you, Representative Poston. We will later hear House File 232 and we'll amend it for current funding from the 2019 budget. And then in the future, yes, we were looking at trying to replace Ted, although Ted is not going to be replaced yet. But eventually, ideally, it would be good to have two people, so one in the potentially north and one in the south. But so we will do our best to kind of move forward toward that goal.
Thank you. I've had a lot of constituents that don't even believe two is enough. So I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. And Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. And if I missed this, Commissioner, I apologize. But well, that $1.8 million request, how much of that gets directly sent back to our county weed inspectors and our county programs?
Deputy Commissioner Balbo.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, I have to double-check that, but I think the majority of it goes to the counties. The majority of it is for the grant program. Some of it does go to staff to help administer the grant program and then also enforcement to help the county ag inspectors. But the majority of it does go to the grant program.
And I'm assuming you could provide greater detail maybe later after the meeting?
Absolutely.
All right. I don't see any other questions right now, so you may continue.
Thank you. The next is for our meat inspection program. This is $500,000 for the biennium, or $250,000 per year. This does leverage another $500,000 in federal funds for equal to inspection services, so every dollar that we put up from the state, the feds will match. So this is two FTEs and funds for additional meat inspections and lab work. It helps the small and local processors freely sell their products in Minnesota. So it is a mandated inspection in order for plants and farmers to sell their product to folks in Minnesota, and so it's important we do this in a timely manner. We have seen some changes within our program. We have folks who are opening or operating on more days, and so that does require more work. We also have a number of inspectors working on compliance work, which is also taking a lot more time, and so sometimes we have to schedule these out for months at a time, and we understand that that's just not feasible for businesses who want to operate. So we do need additional meat inspectors to keep that going. Industrial hemp, I know many of you have heard a lot about. This request is for $600,000 for the biennium, or $300,000 per year. This, again, is a fiscal cliff. We did get a one-time appropriation for this last time. It allows us to continue providing oversight and licensing for the hemp program. We have one person devoted solely to the industrial hemp pilot program. Over the years, we've gotten an increase in applications. I think last time we spoke, we were a little over 100. We are now over 200 applications. So she just needs help managing those licenses, as well as we do have to test all of those fields that we're licensing. And with the farm bill, that changed things, obviously. Even though it won't be a pilot program anymore, we will still have to license and test those who want to be industrial hemp growers. So that work will still continue. This is critical core capacity for plant pathogens and pests. This is a picture of the brown marmorated stink bug, which is one of the bugs that we are monitoring. This is $500,000 for the biennium, or $250,000 per year. This, again, is another fiscal cliff. We got a one-time appropriation for this, which, again, we're very thankful. It helps us respond to emerging plant pests and pathogens, particularly with, again, the changing weather patterns. We're seeing a lot more popping up. It helps us with our export certification. We've been able to go from 54 to 84 monitored pests, and there's new ones popping up all the time. There's a new gall midge in soybeans that there's not a lot known about, and this funding will help us pursue additional surveys on that. And this is for two FTEs to help with plant pest monitoring and analysis. There is federal funding that has just significantly, for particular plant pathogens and pest surveys, that's been unpredictable and limited. So this will help us just have that steady source of funding to keep anticipating those emerging pests. And then finally, the lab capital equipment replacement. So I know a number of you saw our beautiful world-class lab a couple weeks ago. We're very proud of it. And so you probably heard from our wonderful director, Gary Horvath, that we have a number of pieces of equipment that are fully depreciated or will be depreciating very shortly. It's important that we have reliable equipment to help with the important work we do with food safety, plant disease sampling, ag chemical testing as well. So it ensures our public safety it helps us protect the public safety, natural environment, and ag economy. So this is a one-time appropriation of $2,140,000 for the biennium. So any help we can get there would be greatly appreciated as we continue our core work to protect the public. And so with that, Madam Chair, that is the conclusion of our budget recommendations. I'm happy to take any questions.
Any questions? Yes, Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Commissioner, what's the total increase in proposed FTEs in the governor's budget?
That is a good question. I believe the total is, I'm sorry, Madam Chair, Representative Hamilton, the total is, I believe it's five. But I will double check on that.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Hamilton.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Representative Tabke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So this, and I'm sorry, I was running late in getting here this morning, so I don't know if I missed it in the beginning, so if you could help me out with it. These are slices of the budget. What's the total overall picture for the Department of Ag budget?
Madam Chair, Representative Tabke, the total ask is close to $8 million, so it's $7,915,000 for fiscal year 2021.
Okay.
Representative Tabke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so that is an increase of how much over previous?
Madam Chair, Representative Tabke, so that is the total ask over our base budget.
Over the base.
Yes.
Got it.
Correct.
Representative Tabke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I'm just trying to understand how this whole place works. I'm still trying to get there. So what's the total? So these are the increases in budget. So then what's the total budget for the biennium?
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Representative Tabke, I'm going to pull up our Director of Finance and Budget, Sherry Kromschroder, just to get those exact numbers because I want to make sure we get it to you correctly.
And Madam Chair,
Yes, Representative Tabke.
If you don't have it available right now, that's totally fine. I can get it later. I'm just trying to get a handle as to what the total package is and where how that all works and where we can find other efficiencies and bring everything together. So, thank you.
Madam Chair, Representative Tabke, no, we can absolutely get that. I have a general idea, but I just don't want to quote the wrong numbers. But certainly in terms of our general fund, it's not a huge chunk out of the in terms of percentage, but we also have a number of other avenues we get money through clean water funds and federal funds, as well as dedicated amount.
Commissioner, we do have information in our three-ring binder, but I'm going to just ask Ken Savory also just to mention where to find that and the information about that.
Madam Chair and members, it is in the three-ring binder if you look to the overall expenditures, but I believe the answer is $131 million is the total. Within the agriculture area, and then $111 million for the Department of Agriculture, I believe, is the new total.
Thank you.
Any other questions? We did, many of us went and saw the Department of Ag lab and certainly heard about many of the lab equipment needs that we have currently and about the FTE needs as well. So, and it is a wonderful world-class lab, but we need to continue to make it such. And so to look for that, I think it's important to continue to invest some capital dollars into the lab equipment. So appreciate that. Any other questions for the Deputy Commissioner? All right, thank you.
Great, thank you.
I'm sure we'll be addressing this again as we prepare a finance bill. So thank you very much for your presentation. Now we do have some bills that are before us. So I'm going to go ahead and get started. We have House File 232, and so that is in your packet. However, we're going to be amending it. On January 24th, previously we met and we heard a couple of bills. So House File 232, House File 82 and 84 that Representative Keel presented, we laid those over and we all know that there's a need to do something and to do something quickly. And frankly, We've had some recent incidents in the farming community that cause us great concern, and the time is now. We need to begin to address this, and we can't be trying to worry too much about the details, although we want to make it right. So we are trying to make sure that the bill that we will amend is going to be as best it can be to address what the issue is. So I know that yesterday we posted that we were going to do the amendment and the amendment to the amendment. I did consult with Representative Hamilton, and he agreed about the dire need that we need to. And so, Representative Hamilton, if you wanted to comment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And as you stated, you and Representative Keel have been strong champions on this issue. And I thank you for the phone call yesterday as well. And I believe all of us agree with the urgency of all this. So thank you so much for reaching out to us and also working with us on this. Representative Poston contacted me yesterday, too, and had some concerns with where the dollars were going to go and whatnot, and I just want to say thank you for taking those all into consideration.
Absolutely. Thank you. So we do want to make sure that it's right, and we're going to double check with Mr. Sullivan to make sure that we've got it right, but I do have, so the first thing I'd like to do is move the A2 amendment, I need to bring the bill back up. So we're going to bring House File 232 back up before the committee, and I move that House File 232 be referred to the Ways and Means Committee. And then I can move the amendment. So I'm going to move the A2 amendment. So this really just takes $100,000 from the 2019 budget. It's out of, we're canceling out some money from the Agri Fund, and going to be using and spending those dollars in the ways that are designated here. So just as you would be able to read this, it's $100,000, $15,000 for the transfer, and this is where we get a little complicated about how it's going to transfer. We want it to go from the Department of Ag to the colleges, where they are fiscal agents, to Ted Matthews and or a new person. So the $15,000 hopefully we'll take the money and be able to provide some additional funds for Ted Matthews, because he's been putting in a lot of extra time during these last few months. So that would be number one. Number two on line 1.13 is $40,000. Again, the same kind of situation where the transfer would be from the Department of Ag to the colleges where the two centers for agriculture, and that's where we're going to amend that. But that would be to add one person at this point for a statewide mental health counseling. And line 1.16 is $30,000, and this really goes to the department for farmer mental health marketing and training coordination, so to continue to do some things along those lines. And they talked about the radio presence that they want to do, so that's important. We need to make sure that throughout the state people are aware of the hotline, the helpline, to make sure that they are able to access information as needed. And sometimes it's beyond the farmers. It's really going to be the spouses and the children and other interested parties that may be reaching out through the helpline to actually see what they can do. And then we have line 1.17, which is to increase funding for farm advocate services and farmer lender mediators. So we are doing that. It's a one-time appropriation, but as you heard from the governor's budget, it's something that is under consideration for the next 2 years that we would put in the budget. So it's in preparation for that, but spend it now. Get the dollars to the right people. Get more people on the ground. We need many people to address this issue. So that is the A2 amendment. So I just, if any questions? Yes, Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And as you stated, and I'm looking to you or staff to make sure that this is indeed a one-time appropriation, one-time cancellation and reappropriated, and not an ongoing cut to Agri. Is that an accurate statement?
Thank you, Representative Hamilton. And I just will, with Mr. Sullivan, will be able to affirm that.
Madam Chair and members, and in particular Representative Hamilton, to your question, that's true. The cancellation that's provided on in the A2 amendment on lines 3 to 6, that's one time because the underlying bill that's amended, or the appropriations that are amended from laws 2017, sets the base of AGRI at $14.275 million. And this language does not change that. So AGRI would be at its full base level in 2021, pending decisions obviously made by this committee going forward. And the appropriations that are specified in the A2 on line 1.18, those are one-time appropriations.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yes, thank you, Representative Hamilton. Okay, so we have another Representative Anderson. Do you have a question?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. So is this like borrowing from the AGRI fund, or is it a one-time taking from the fund and not going to be paid back to AGRI?
Thank you, Representative Anderson. And if someone from the department would care to come down and address this, but what my understanding is, it is money that has not been spent within the AGRI fund, so we are repurposing it for this. So, Deputy Commissioner Vaubel can speak.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, that is correct. So it is money that was already within AGRI that has not been expended yet for 2019 that was available to be used for this purpose.
Thank you. Okay, so any other discussion on this amendment? All right, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Okay, the motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Now we have an amendment to the amendment. So I apologize that somewhat in our haste, we were looking at the Board of Trustees. That is technically the people that are in charge of the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities, but we want to be clear. So I'm going to ask Mr. Sullivan just the question that many of us have to make sure that this amendment, the A3 amendment, which would take the money from the Department of Ag, from the AGRI account in the Department of Ag, and transfer to the Board of Trustees, but through the Minnesota State Agricultural Centers of Excellence, South Central College and Central Lakes College, serving as the fiscal agents, if that covers it to the point where the money will flow more directly to those two colleges for this purpose. So, Mr. Sullivan.
Madam Chair and members, the language in the A3 amendment is the language that was adopted, enacted by the legislature, or passed by the legislature last year, but vetoed by Governor Dayton. I'm not exactly sure about the mechanics of how this speeds the money to the intended recipients and through the Board of Trustees, but I know that this language was developed in consultation with stakeholders last year, and I believe that's the intent. So this is the same language. If members adopt the A3 amendment, they'll be inserting the same language that was in the vetoed supplemental bill last year that also provided additional money for farmer mental health.
Thank you. So I know Representative Poston had that question. Does that satisfy your question? Thank you. So I think we will, if we can adopt this, then we will have the time maybe to address it with the people that are going to receive this money and make sure that they're going to be able to get it. It does stop at Ways and Means and then from Ways and Means to the floor. I'm hoping that we will get it in the right and proper format when we send it out of here, but just keep that in mind that we may have to catch it and change it a little bit more. So, but I appreciate, I think due diligence was done last year regarding this, Representative Hamilton. So,
yes, thank you, Madam Chair. And again, thank you for allowing us to work through this as well. And as you pointed out, both you and I serve on the Ways and Means Committee, and we'll reach out to the various stakeholders here as you will. And if we need to readjust this in Ways and Means, I think that would be appropriate.
Thank you. Thank you. Representative Wasilak.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I just had a quick process question. So we have an amendment to the amendment. Does that mean we have to vote on the amendment to the amendment and then the amendment again because there's been an amendment made to the amendment?
That's a great question. We should be able to amend the amendment, and then that becomes what we'll be focusing on. It will be the amended amendment, but it will actually become the bill.
Okay.
Is that... Am I stating that correctly for everybody around the table?
Madam Chair.
Representative Hamilton.
We're amending the amendment. And once that's passed, then we'll vote on the amendment as amended. So.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you. It's good parliamentary procedure here that we're all working with. So, all right. So any further discussion about the A3 amendment? Seeing none. All those in favor of the A3 amendment say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. The motion prevails, and so the amendment is adopted, and that means that this amendment has been attached to the A2 amendment, but that has been attached as the House File 232. So that's what we now have. So Representative Anderson, did you have a question?
No.
Okay.
Did we already vote on
it? I think we... let me just look at staff to make sure, Mr. Sullivan, we have done everything properly to get the bill in the shape that we want it. Is that correct?
Madam Chair and members, yes, I think that is correct. I think the order of the A2 and the A3 could have been reversed, but I think as long as everyone is clear on what the committee has done, which is to amend the A2, and then the A2, as amended, goes on to the underlying bill, I think as long as everyone knows, understands the votes that have been taken, it's fine the way it was done.
Thank you. Thank you. So is that Representative Anderson?
Yeah, that's what I was going to suggest, too, that I think we voted on the amendment, then we change the amendment. But like the intent is we understand the intent, so I'm fine with that. Yeah.
Okay. So my apologies. I should have read my notes clearer because I believe that my staff had it correct, but I didn't follow my staff's guidance. So I apologize for that. But I think, and Representative Wozlowak, that was your point. Yes, so very good. Thank you. All right, so we're good to go. We have that. Now, are there people who would like to testify on behalf of the House File 232 as amended? And I think we have Bruce Miller who has indicated he would. There may be others who might want to, but if Mr. Miller, if you'll come down, please.
Yeah.
Madam Chair, Bruce Miller with Minnesota Farmers Union. I'm going to be brief. I want to underline the importance of this bill. That's my whole purpose for being here. I was here with the rest of the testimony. I've talked to many of you. But I'm representing the women and men of Minnesota Farmers Union, and this is one of our high priority, high legislative priorities this year. We support this package with its amendments. Which provides relief and help for farmers who are struggling through 5 years of below-average income. This is a bill about hope. As spring promises to arrive, this legislation allows the Minnesota Department of Agriculture to move ahead to provide direct assistance to distressed farm families through counseling, advocacy, telephone, and outreach help. All important. This is too important of an issue to let go any longer. This is a proposal that aims to leave no farmer behind. Leave no farmer behind. What a concept. Now, that's a goal we can all support. This week, I said this is a bill about hope. I've had two calls from farmers who are talking about their situations, and it gets very personal. And one of them posed the question to me, where's my hope? Well, members of the committee, Madam Chair, thank you, because I think you are promising that hope. And I think as you move this legislation forward quickly, we will leave no farmer behind, and we will be able to offer them the hope that they're asking for. Thank you, Madam Chair, and if there are any questions, I'd be happy to respond.
Thank you, Mr. Miller. I don't see any questions. Oh, Representative Tapke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Miller, I just have a quick question. We heard this bill a few weeks ago. What has changed between then and now to add the urgency to getting this done currently? What has changed in the ether, I guess?
Mr. Miller.
Madam Chair, Representative, the stress continues to mount. The calls continue to come in. The pressure is on. The credit is tight. The prices continue to be low. The farmer that called me the other day is a dairy farmer, and she said that my price has dropped by 40% over the last 5 years. I'm not making any money. We're story after story of every time there's a sales barn auction, another dairy farm goes down, and there are a lot of sales barn auctions in the state of Minnesota. What's changed is another week, another 2 weeks, another day. Every day puts that pressure forward, and every day that we don't have the kind of help that people are seeking puts one more farmer at pressure and in danger.
Thank you.
Yes. Any other questions? Thank you, Mr. Miller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, committee.
Is there anyone else in the audience who would like to come down to speak? Ms. Linetti, please come down and state your name for the record, please.
Good morning, Chair Poppe, members of the committee. My name is Josie Linetti, Associate Director of Public Policy with the Minnesota Farm Bureau. We appreciate this committee's focus on the financial and emotional challenges that are impacting agriculture and our farm families. Thank you to Chair Poppe and all of the co-authors on this bill for moving this legislation forward. This will provide needed additional funding for statewide mental health counseling and other supports for our farm families and rural communities. With that, we'll be succinct. I know we've had conversations on this in the past, and we appreciate this legislation moving forward. With that, if there are any questions, that concludes my testimony.
Thank you, Ms. Linetti. I think we have a question. Representative Cleburne.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just trying to make sure I have my numbers right in my mind. So in the bill itself, there is on page 3, just at the very top of the page, it shows an appropriation. So at the bottom of page 2 on line 2.31, there is the $113,000 taken out. And then the appropriation of $330,000 is on the next page, page 3. Is this $100,000 in addition to this $330,000? I'm just trying to understand. I'm sorry.
So the original bill no longer is what was on the table at all.
No, I understand that.
So what we're doing is this is an increase.
Okay.
From
the $330,000.
What the original fund, so it's the original $113,000 or $115,000.
Right.
This was an increase from that.
Okay.
I'll add. Sense?
I'm still a little confused by it because the. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
You know, one thing I'll. Thank you, Ms. Linetti. I appreciate your testimony. One thing is we are now at the middle of February. So part of the adjustment, too, is that we have a short amount of time until the end of the fiscal year, which is June 30th. So because of that, you know, we reduce the amounts to be more prorated to the amount of time that we have and the spending. So it's not ongoing into the future, and it wasn't from last year going forward. It's just for from now till the end of June.
Thank you.
Okay.
I appreciate that.
Thank you. Any other questions or testifiers? All right. So we have before us House File 232 as amended, and I renew my motion to move House File 232 as amended and be referred to the Ways and Means Committee. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed, nay. The motion prevails, and House File 232 is referred to the Ways and Means Committee. So thank you very much for doing that. Appreciate that. And appreciate your support. That's a serious issue. So we're going to move on now to the next bill, which is House File 623. And this is the Minnesota Agriculture Education Leadership Council funding provided and money appropriated. So I'm going to just have Sarah Dornink, who's the executive director for MALC, as we call it, step forward. So there's a research summary in your packets. There no amendments were pre-filed, and this is a bill that we're going to lay over for possible inclusion. So I'm going to move House File 623 with the intention that we would lay this over for possible inclusion. So Sarah Dornink. Welcome to the committee, and you can begin your presentation.
Okay. Thank you. Just for the official record, again, Sarah Dornick, the Executive Director of the Minnesota Agricultural Education Leadership Council. Today, Representative Poppe asked me to give a brief overview of what MALC is, and then at the end I will talk specifically to the bill.
So MLC is a 17-member legislative council that started in 1997 to promote and expand ag education opportunities across the state. We are a very small staff. It is myself as the director, and Carrie Schwab is our program coordinator. MLC's scope of work works around advocating and informing people, legislators, government officials, ag industry, education staff about ag food and natural resource education. We also work engaging our partners in advancing things forward, and as well as support both financially and through staff time. When we talk about agriculture education, AFNR, they're kind of used intermingly. AFNR is ag food and natural resource education. We work in five sector areas, so ag literacy, school-based ag education, which is kind of grades 7 to 12, post-secondary education, agriculture teacher preparation, and the Farm Business Management Program, which is out of the Minnesota state system. You all received an AFNR blueprint. This is also guiding MLC's work in the next few years. This was a statewide strategic plan we created through listening sessions and committee work. We have goals, strategies, and indicators of success for each of those five sectors that I mentioned, as well as four main goals that MLC is working towards, again, over the next few years. So we want to increase the quality of instruction, increase the people who are involved in ag, food, and natural resource education, increase the understanding of those systems, and just make sure that those programs that we do have are fully supported. MLC funding, since you are the Finance Committee, this is probably the most important thing that you care about. We had an original appropriation in 1997 of $300,000 through the university-based budget, or well, through the Ag Special, and now it's part of the university-based budget. It's just a little under $250,000. It's kind of gone down through the years. Out of this committee, we have two different lines of funding. One is for our grants and special projects. It's $235,000 that comes in for just for those things. And then 4 years ago, we received this $2 million, which is specifically for farm business management and mentor programs. Comes in, goes back out. We're housed at the University of Minnesota. And they serve as our fiscal agent. And yes, we are very lean. We spend 8% of our budget on operating. So 92% of our funds go right back out to the state, all across the state, through either our grants program, farm business management, or we have a scholarship program. And so I'm just going to break down those just a little bit to give you an idea. Scholarship fund, obviously, Minnesota, like the nation, is in they're in a teacher shortage, but we are working specifically on the agriculture teacher shortage. We provide scholarships for those students who are studying to become future teachers. We have an incoming freshman in a continuing undergraduate program, a master's or a graduate level program, and then a diversity fellowship that's working to try to diversify our teacher candidate pool. MLC also serves as our state chair for the STAR committee, which is State Teach Ag Results. It's a recruitment and retention pilot project out of the National Teach Ag campaign. MLC is the leadership for that. We have about 15 strategies we're working on trying to increase those people who are interested in becoming agriculture teachers, mainly at the high school level, for those of you unfamiliar. Most people know us for our program grants because that's what affects them locally. Again, this is at 235, and this is the piece that the HF 623 is based around. We have two programs that we run. One is Common Fund Grants, which are statewide, and those are around the blueprint goals, and then Strategic Initiative Grants, which is our smaller grants. Just to give you an idea of some of those statewide projects that we are working on, so some things are around curriculum, some things on professional development, diversifying those who are receiving ag education, and then working with the FFA, trying to set them up for success. So those are just a few examples. Our strategic initiatives grant, we just recently changed these again based on what we heard from the blueprint. Things we're trying to do, making sure everyone has access, so starting new or expanding programs that we have or getting them experiences in AFNR, having program improvements to our current programs, whether that's helping them integrate science and economic standards, securing equipment and technology particularly. Schools struggle with funds, and so we are getting a lot of asks for equipment. And then just changing or improving the courses they have. And then, of course, teacher professional development is always important, and that's at all levels, farm business management, post-secondary, and at our secondary program. So, again, just this was just our grants that we approved in December. We do a lot of different ones, some technology things, some ag science. Natural resource was a big hit this fall, apparently. So we have a few in the natural resources area. And then we are excited, two new programs are starting up, one up in Crookston, which they have not had a program in many, many years, and then Greenway High School as well. So we try to help programs that are starting new. Our grants, because they're statewide, they do affect every county in the state. These dots on the map just represent where the actual address of the grant applicant is listed. 44% of ours go right back out to those local secondary programs, 26% to the post-secondary, so either to MinState or the U of M. Sometimes those grants are affecting actually younger students or teachers. It's just those institutions are leading them. Support organizations would be like the FFA, Department of Education, the Ag Teachers Association, and then Ag Literacy Projects. The $2 million, again, is for all that is heading back out. So the main portion of that goes towards Farm Business Management Challenge Grants. There are 8 institutions in the Minnesota state system that offer farm business management. They receive a portion of the direct expenses that they spend, and then they have to meet certain parameters around maintaining their faculty, students, being part of the database, and then also professional development. The second piece is for additional instructor grants, so we want to make sure that we are impacting all of the state. And so over the past 2 bienniums, we've added 9 instructors. So these grants, we added 4 new instructors in the last biennium. The third piece, which was new this year, we had just on some technicalities, we had some money that we wanted to award, and so we did a specialized grant for a succession specialist. And so this is for a farm transition program. It's actually a partnership between Minnesota State and the University of Minnesota, offering workshops to farm families that are looking to transition their farms from that older generation to the next generation. And they seem to be going very well. They are up and in action right now as we speak. We do spend $10,000 on evaluating these programs. And then the last piece is a small portion for mentor program grants. And so those are, there's 4 mentor programs that we run out of this budget. One is for the teacher induction program, which is for first-year agriculture secondary teachers. We have an over 90% retention rate of those who participate in this from first year to second year of ag teachers. We want to keep them in the profession. Our second program is Ripple Resources for Professional Learning, and we're focusing on those years 2 to 10. We have about 60% of our teachers are actually 10 years or less, and so we're trying to help build their confidence as teachers, both as in their profession and their technical skills, but also work-life balance and trying to avoid that burnout that happens with our teachers. And so that's a program that all are invited to participate, but we're focusing in that early career experience. The third area is for post-secondary teachers. A lot of those teachers have technical skills, but maybe have never taken any education pedagogy, and so we're trying to help them learn how to share their technical skills in an educational setting. And then the last program is for farm business management. That's our PEP, Professional Excellence Program. It's for FBM instructors with 4 years or less. And just speaking of FBM, this is a picture of where our instructors are. As you can see, we have a lot of saturation in the bottom part of the state because that's where a lot of our farms are. Some of our northern ones are going, you know, farther distances, covering wider geographic areas. We do have a couple statewide positions. Thaddeus is up, and he does specialty crops, and then there's some lamb and wool that are out of the Minnesota state that cover the whole state. So specifically today, I wanted to talk about HS 623, which would be funding an increase for Male Seeds Grant and Special Projects. Currently, this budget is for $235,000 and is used solely for grants, and we are asking for a $265,000 increase, so the new budget total would be $500,000. The original appropriation was $250,000 in 2007. However, it was lowered in budget cuts in about 2011. This request is just to help keep up with inflation and demand for ag education programming. It has not been touched in 12 years, so we wanted to make this request. Mills would like to focus these additional funds in 2 areas. One is to increase our grant program funds and support initiatives to assist in recruiting and retaining more students, teachers, and programs in AFNR. Each year, there are excellent agriculture education projects that we are unable to support. In the last 5 years, we've awarded grants at a 54.5% rate. However, we've been unable to fund $300,000 in grant requests every year. In recent grant rounds, this includes not funding statewide grants for teacher professional development at Farm America and Waseca, a tractor safety education curriculum with the U of M Extension, a leadership program for the Minnesota FFA alumni. It also means that we could not fund local projects such as program expansion at the Academy for Science and Agriculture in Badness Heights, classroom equipment and new courses in places like Canby, Howard Lake, Tracy, Osakis, Ogilvie, and many others, and urban ag literacy projects with those, such as those with the Minnesota Landscape Arboretum, Woodbury YMCA, and Metro State University. Each time we're not able to fund a grant, these are opportunities missed for providing access and experience for students. These are lost chances to engage our youth in the agriculture and food system and untapped employees for our AFNR workforce. The other portion of these funds will be used to implement the blueprint strategies around recruitment and retention of students, teachers, and high school programs. For example, we'd like to start a Teach Ag Ambassador program where we'd have two ambassadors from each of our licensing institutes who would then work to help recruit other students to think about the agriculture teaching profession. Because of our role as a collaborative hub and a spark for innovation, we see ideas come to life that exist on a plan that may not always be a one-time or startup project. We have become an established partner and a leader beyond acting as a steward of resources. However, the way our funding is designated, we do not have the ability to manage the initiatives we are often asked to lead. The funding increase will not only allow us to see greater process for one-time or startup initiatives, it will support what our partners have been asking us to do, the opportunity to strategically take on projects as MAILC initiatives that exist separately from one-time grant applications. Thank you for your time and consideration to further support MAILC. I'd be happy to answer any questions about MAILC, ag education, or the bill specifically at this time.
All right. Do we have questions?
Great.
Great. Excellent. So Representative Poston has served on the MAILC board, Representative Anderson, Representative Hamilton, I've served. So it's... We have become familiar with what you've done, but I appreciate that you were able to go through today to let us know. And Representative Wozniak, you have a comment, question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just wondering, can you, others have served on the board, but what does the board actually do? I guess I'm interested in knowing that. Maybe that was covered in the MAILC presentation, but just for reference in this moment, if someone can just talk about what the role is of the board.
Absolutely. I'll just have Ms. Dornank, if you just want to talk about, again, 17-member board, and it's not made up of entirely of legislators.
No. Chair Poppin, Representative. So the 17 members are listed in statute of how they're designated. There are six legislators, three from the House, so the chair and the minority lead from the Ag Committee and an education representative. So Representative Poston just finished his term, and Representative Mary Kunish-Podine is from the Education Committee. And then we have three from the Senate, same makeup. Then there are two governor appointees, and then representatives from the Department of Agriculture, Department of Education, FFA Foundation, the Ag Teachers Association, the University of Minnesota, Minnesota State, and then also the Minnesota Private College Council. However, they do not currently have someone sitting in a position. And so the board, a lot of it is staff leading and doing the efforts. The board is the guiding over it. And so they meet three times a year to help set the budget, to help. We have a separate grants and a scholarship committee that approve those. Legislators are not on those committees. And so they're actually guiding and telling us what priorities they have and what we should be doing. And then also just being stewards of the funds to make sure that they're being used appropriately.
Yes. All right. Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Dornick. We do have this bill, House File 623, before us. And so I'm just going to ask if anyone else has any, would like to testify on this bill. I don't see anyone doing that. No other questions? Okay, so I'm just going to lay this over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Ag Finance Bill. So renew that motion. Thank you. And so now we're moving on to House File 1320, which is AURI. And we have had the presentation from AURI in the past, but we appreciate that we have Mr. Scogan and Mr. Schlecht here today to be able to provide some additional information and the reason for this bill before us. So, again, my intention is to lay this bill over, but I move House File 1320. So, Mr. Schlecht, welcome to the committee.
Very good. Thank you, Chair Poppe, members of the committee. It's a pleasure to be here again today and to discuss the importance of this bill for ARI. ARI, as I mentioned previously in a past testimony, works on over 230 projects each year across the state, working to add value to the crops that are grown here in Minnesota, turn ideas into reality, and to commercialize new opportunities to create demand, which in turn helps farm gate prices to farmers into our rural areas. We had a study completed by the University of Minnesota Extension that showed that our direct and indirect benefits to the state and to the economy exceed $140 million per year. And that is through, of course, the partnership that we have with the legislature and the appropriation that we receive each year. Currently, ARI has 26 full-time staff and 4 part-time staff. We operate 3 offices in greater Minnesota, and we do rent small office space here in the metro area as well to conduct our activities, to meet with clients, and to advance those opportunities. We do work very hard to hold our costs in check as an organization, but we do experience a regular cost of living increases for salaries, of course, for health insurance, for rental space in our laboratories and our office space, and other incidental operating expenses as well. And that is the focus of the bill today, to provide an offset to some of those cost of living increases that we experience and that we have not asked for several years in terms of making us more whole in terms of providing additional funds to direct towards our programs and activities that we do as an organization. We have also been working very hard on additional revenue streams from alternative sources, as is put in statute, through our fee-for-service work, through looking at royalty generation, through partnerships and federal grants and other opportunities to provide additional funds from other resources to leverage the state dollars for the work that we do as well. As I mentioned in my previous testimony, we have been slightly outspending our revenues in recent years to keep up with demand that we're experiencing, a couple hundred thousand last fiscal year and a little over 100,000 the year before as well. So we have been dipping into our reserves to continue to function as an organization and to provide the most impact that we can. Obviously, that's not a sustainable path for us as well, so we would, again, appreciate the additional funding here to help offset some of those increased expenses that we have been experiencing here in on a regular basis. I also just wanted to add that I feel strongly, it's been a little over 3 years that I've been here at ARI, and I do think we strongly contribute to the state's economy, to the agricultural industry, to turning those ideas and keeping that innovative spirit to the communities and the people that we serve as well as an organization. Finally, we continue to greatly appreciate the partnership that we've had with the legislature for nearly 30 years at ARI, and appreciate your consideration of this request. Chair Poppe.
Thank you, Mr. Schlecht. We have a question, Representative Poston.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Director, if you could just update us a little bit on your cash reserves. I think in 2017 it was about $4 million, if I'm not mistaken. Can you tell us where it is today now that you've dipped into it a little bit?
Mr. Schlecht.
Chair Poppe, Representative Poston, members of the committee, our reserves today stand at about $4.3 million. And that is about a 10-month operating reserve for us, which when we look at it on a biennium basis, we're at about a 0.4 ratio in terms of our reserves to our budget. Our budget this year is just a little over $4.9 million.
Representative Poston.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Lewis.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My understanding is that the governor's budget's got some slightly different numbers in here than what we've got in front of us. Can we get that kind of clarified as to is this in congruence with the governor's proposal?
Mr. Schlecht.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the governor also did include an increase for ARI. The funding is similar for the first year of the governor's increase, but then he holds steady for the second year and doesn't provide the cost of living increase in year two to the as large of a degree as this bill would.
Right.
I wasn't sure. Thank you, Mr. If that so this isn't a drafting error. This is just different from what the governor proposes. Okay. Thank you.
This is from AURI, their proposal. All right. Any other questions from committee members? Anyone else that would like to testify on House File 1320? Okay, seeing none, thank you, Mr. Schlecht. So I renew the motion to hold House File 1320, that it be laid over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Ag Finance Bill. All right, so we now move on. We've got House File 829, and that's Representative Anderson. It's regarding the Rural Finance Authority. So we previously had a brief presentation about RFA programs, so we probably aren't going to go into too much detail on that, but we do have the opportunity to hear from the author here of this bill. And so if you would go ahead, Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that House File 829 be referred to the Committee of Ways and Means with a recommendation of referral to the Capital Investment Committee.
Thank you. You can may go ahead and present your bill.
As you mentioned, Madam Chair, when we heard about the Rural Finance Authority in committee a couple of weeks back, they told us that they may be running out of funds as early as this fall. So this bill is pretty straightforward. It just authorizes them to do another round of bond purchases, $35 million, and just to kind of get that ball rolling before they would run out of funding at the RFA. So, Madam Chair, that's what the bill does. It's pretty straightforward, and they do good work. Beginning farmer programs are one of the rapidly growing areas of loans, along with restructuring. So a pretty important factor that they do.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. I'm going to see if someone from the department would come down just to talk about what the need is currently. Or if you, so Deputy Commissioner Bauble. So welcome back to the committee. And so I just want, because this is a fund that does, you know, get reduced as it gets used, I just wanted to see about the current status and give you the opportunity to talk about this.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't have the exact numbers with me right now, but we can get those to you about just the current status of where the money is at. But $35 million is a great starting point for us, particularly to get through the next year. We, as you probably heard from our folks earlier, that there is quite a demand for the loans that we provide through RFA, and we only anticipate that to get to increase. So this is very helpful for us and a great starting point for bonding money for RFA.
Thank you. Representative Miller has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Deputy Commissioner, if you could clarify for me, I've carried this bill the last couple of years, and the first year that we did it, which is a great program, I love it. But the first year we did it, we had to have sort of a special insert. This typically happens in the second year of the bonding year. We had to have a special one because that bonding bill had failed the previous year, so we put it in. And then we came back last year because the amount – now, typically when we fund this, Madam Chair, and for people of the committee, it's been traditionally lasting about 3 to 5 years. It always depends on what's going on. And we've been now putting every year in similar amounts to what used to be 3 to 5 years. So maybe if the Deputy Commissioner can explain kind of two parts. Number one, what's dramatically changed in the last year or two to affect that, the loan program increasing that much, and also what you project in the future. I mean, is this going to be $35 million every year now? Or I just want to know kind of where this is going.
Deputy Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Representative Miller, that's a great question. I would say that over the last couple of years, I think that we've done a good job of getting the word out about the usage of these, the availability of these programs. Not as many farmers, I think, were aware of the low-interest loans that we provide. So I think we've just done a better job of getting the word out on those. And so, and particularly with the hard times that we've been experiencing the last few years, folks are in need of this a little bit more. So I would say that we anticipate that we will likely increase, and $35 million, again, is a great place to start, but potentially we'll need more in the few years coming up.
Okay, Madam Chair, a couple real quick things. A question and then sort of a follow-up request. So with this great increase, one of the great things about this program is the default rate is so small, it's like infinitesimal, and it doesn't matter. So just a two-part thing. Number one, can we anticipate that with this great expansion, we're not going to be seeing that? And number two, in past years, we've had some of the lending institutions support this. If there's anyone here that can kind of just give their, if there's not a big deal, Madam Chair, but if there's anyone here that could kind of lend there, because this is a good partnership with the private lending institutions. I just want to make sure they still like where this program is going. Sure, they don't dislike it. I would like to hear that. But what about the failure rate, the default rate?
Deputy Commissioner or Representative Anderson, whoever has that answer.
I would comment, Madam Chair, on the support of private lenders. It certainly lessens their exposure to some of these bills, some of these loans, if they get fairly large. And we have increased the eligibility numbers, too, for loans, which could also be a factor in why the demand has increased. As Commissioner mentioned, the economy has become difficult. And the increase, partially of what we've done with beginning farmer programs, that part of the program, I think, is the most rapidly increasing number. So that, coupled with the economy, I think, is what has driven the increased demand for funds here.
Thank you. And Deputy Commissioner Vogel, the other part of the question was just the percentage of people that default. We heard that before, but if you have that.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative Miller, I can get you the exact numbers, but you are correct. They have been very, very, very low, and that trend has not changed, and we don't anticipate it to.
Okay. Thank you. We have a couple of other questions, so Representative Wasilek.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Anderson or Deputy Commissioner, I'm wondering if you could speak to the bill in line 1.18 says that priority for loans must be given first to, and it has a series of loan types. I'm wondering if you could speak to what priority means. Like, how do we determine that? Is it percentage? Is it first come, first serve? Like, how do we define priority there? I just want to make sure that this is really going to the folks who need it the most, which is often the beginning farmers.
Representative Anderson.
Is there a phone a friend here? I would assume that the beginning farmer portion would be highest priority. And then to me, the restructuring, but I don't know how they rate those or the criteria they use. I can't comment on that.
Okay. If there's more information that can be gathered, I'm sure people would know that that's your question. Representative Cleborn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm also piggybacking on the exact same line, which I think is pretty funny. But when it says beginning farmer loans, in talking with some of the dairy farmers earlier who were transitioning their farms, they said that when it's a generational transition, they don't actually qualify for first farmer loans because it's the same farm. Is that accurate? And then the other question I have on that exact same line is when it says third to agricultural improvement loans, is because I would like to see this money going to our family farms and our smaller farms as a priority. I'm wondering, is there a cap on the size of the farm that can borrow these low-interest funds? That's my question.
Representative Anderson.
Madam Chair and Representative, I can tackle the first part. Beginning farmer has a legal definition, okay. And that definition is 10 years or fewer of farming experience. And I heard an instance of a younger fella that farmed a year high school, for example, and had a Schedule F tax return. Mm-hmm. And that continued on then for a number of years. And when he came back later on, after that 10 years had elapsed, he no longer qualified because that first farmer income portion was more than 10 years prior. So it is a legal term of 10 years or fewer to qualify for beginning farmer. And the rest of the question, I forgot.
The rest of the question was about, because I would like to see these dollars going to the mid-size and smaller farmers, I'm wondering, is there a cap on the size of the farm that can borrow these low-interest loans?
Deputy Commissioner Vogel.
Chair Poppe, Representative Cleborn. I will double check with you on that. I'm not sure if there is a cap. I know that we give loans to a broad number of size farms and locations. So I will certainly get that information for you, though.
I can clarify that, Madam Chair. Maybe they can better, but I can clarify that.
I'll start with Mr. Sullivan.
Yeah.
And then We'll go from there. Mr. Sullivan.
Madam Chair and members, under Minnesota Statutes 41B, which is the RFA chapter, it prescribes eligibility for beginning farmer loans. And there isn't a limit on the acreage or the loan amount that I see offhand here, but there is a net worth limit for eligible farmers. Mm-hmm. It's a total net worth, including assets and liabilities of the borrower's spouse and dependents, of less than $800,000 in 2017 and an amount in subsequent years, which is adjusted for inflation.
Perfect. Thank you very much for that clarification.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Thank you. Yes, Representative Miller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I can also kind of expand. I kind of got very deep into the RFA the last couple of years because this question has been asked, who's this money going to? One of the things to put into perspective is this is a matching loan outside the beginning farmer, so like for distressed loans. This is a 40% match with private institutions at 60%. And so the amount and level is really determined by the farmer's ability to borrow as a whole. And so that tends to keep there's sort of an implied cap because of that. I hope that makes sense. That it's really, that this is really in support of the private institution's work and meant to stabilize a loan that otherwise might be unstable.
Thank you, Representative Miller. I think, again, we'll turn to Mr. Sullivan for some further clarification.
Just to clarify, Madam Chair and members, just to clarify, there's another section in 41B that deals with beginning farmer loan eligibility, and the state's participation in a beginning farmer loan through the RFA is 45% of the principal amount of the loan or $400,000, whichever is left.
Thank you for that. Thank you. All right. Are there any other questions on this bill? Thank you. Are there any other testifiers? All right. Representative Anderson, any closing comments?
Yeah, Madam Chair, just a comment for some of the newer members on the committee. Some of those numbers we just heard may sound kind of high, but I think it gives you an example of the amount of money or capital it takes to operate even a small to medium-sized farm. It's an intensive labor or a capital-intensive business. So just to keep that in mind when you think about those numbers maybe being high, they really aren't in terms of what it takes to operate a farm. Madam Chair, no, I would appreciate the support for the bill. I renew my motion that House File 829 be re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee with a recommendation of referral to the Capital Investment Committee.
Thank you. The motion is before us. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. The motion prevails, and House File 829 is on its way to Ways and Means. Thank you, Representative Anderson. I just want to say to the committee members, thank you so much for your attention today and thoughtfulness, and I think we are doing things on behalf of farmers for their well-being and health and safety and for the farm economy. We're doing things that help with the well-being, and that is something we will continue doing. In a bipartisan fashion, we will meet on Tuesday. We will have some dairy bills. Representative Anderson has some. I have some. I know we're going to do some farm-to-food shelf, farm-to-school kinds of things. So a little bit, we'll be busy on Tuesday. We may run a little long. I'm just going to warn people that we do have the room until 11:45 that day. I don't anticipate it will necessarily go that long, but we, just so you're aware of that we're going to try and get through all those bills. But certainly we want the discussion and to make sure people feel comfortable from this committee to be able to move bills forward. So appreciate your time and attention. And with that, there are no other business before the committee, so we are adjourned.